What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode and another season of the Good Anime Palette Podcast. This is episode number 73, where we talk about anime series adaptation primer number 4. I am your co-host, Jason. Joining across the table from me is Will, and it is day zero for any accidents that has occurred with podcast equipment and setup. How's it going, Will?
Yeah,
OSHA representative Will.
Yeah, if you hear any differences in the sound of my voice that is recording, it's because we're using a backup mic. I had a little bit of an accident when setting up the microphone, the original microphone, and there's a little bit of an oopsie on it. So yeah, whilst that's under maintenance, we'll be using this microphone for the foreseeable future. But you know, we've used it before, and it sounded fine.
It's fine. I mean, we didn't ask the floor how it felt, but last time we checked, or at least every time I speak to the floor, it never really talks back to me. I don't get it.
Like, it's pretty troubling that you're talking to the floor. You're not entering some sort of like shining?
Personally, I just think the floor is just being a tsundere. It's kind of annoying.
Here's Jason.
At least I won't grab an axe and just start like ripping the floor apart.
Are you sure your floor is a tsundere, or it's just cool as fuck? It doesn't want to talk to you?
No, but if I... Oh, so if I use an axe to open it up,
Or would you want it to be like, you know, screaming every time you step on it? Be like, you know, this is, you know, you got the yandere floor tiles, you know? I mean, which tiles did you buy?
I mean, I would prefer it in the yandere floor as opposed to a dandere floor, because imagine every time I step on the floor and they'll be like, oh, I'm happy to see you. Oh, thanks for stepping on me. I'd be like, bro, chill, all right?
Yeah, but we're not doing an episode talking about if floor tiles were dairy types.
Oh my god, but I am not surprised. I mean, was it like Welcome to the NHK, right?
Yeah.
With refrigerators and stuff. So it's not like inconceivable that something like that would occur if you mix like pervertedness and stuff.
I think that like with the NHK itself is like a rabbit hole in terms of trying to dissect personality types, in terms of trying to understand the inner workings of the human mind.
So Welcome to the Paprika?
Well, we still haven't watched it yet. I haven't watched it yet.
But I won't be surprised. I haven't watched it either, but I won't be surprised if it's like the floor just starts talking to you.
Yep. Well, enough about talking about floor tiles and dairy types and everything connected between the two, in which there's really no connection. Don't look that deep into it. Don't Google it. Do not Google that shit.
It ain't that deep, guys. Don't get it twisted. But yep, we are at a new season. This is season number 7, and we are starting right off the bat with some heavy, heavy manga.
Yeah. So one thing we should do as well is we did mention that there's going to be a few changes, a few updates to the new iterations of the GAP. Nothing major. We're still going to be releasing on a frequent basis every 2 weeks, hopefully, barring any, you know, force majeure or acts of God or natural disasters.
I mean, we're just two dudes, right?
Yeah, it's kind of hard. It's like if one person drops out, it's not like the other person can pick up the slack, right? Like unless, of course, that's what you guys want. You just want to hear Jason talk, let us know. You want to hear just me talk, let me know.
No, don't let us know either way. We don't want to know. I don't want to know.
Well, if we do know, then we're still going to be recording both of us anyway.
Yes.
We're not changing that.
We're not changing that.
One thing that we will be changing, though, is that what we're going to be doing with future episodes, specifically with the EPs, is that we'll be trying to streamline episodes. Now, this is not necessarily like something that has come off as a criticism from people or more like things that we should focus on changing. But we do notice that, of course, that it's not always that our episodes are 2 hours. Sometimes it's 2 hours, 15, 2.5. You will all know.
Or the legendary three.
The historic milestone of the 3 hours always goes to our season finale episodes. So
or episode zero. I think episode zero.
That one was because we were like,
We just didn't know anything.
We didn't know what we were going to talk about, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So what we're going to do is we're actually going to consolidate our news and potentially our rewatch sections into potentially our After Darks, maybe as like a BP. We're going to be a little bit more experimental with how we go with that format, but that also means that we're able to showcase more content and more discussion whilst also not sort of like sacrificing the amount of time that's needed to be spent on talking about them. We want to make sure that we have a laser focus on these discussion topics so that we are, you know, 100% giving you the full lowdown of what the hell we want to talk about for that recording.
Yeah, and that way we can also have a reading, watching, / news roundup kind of segment somewhere in our release.
We've had those like discussions, those rants. There was a rant episode about, you know, Spy Family.
BP6.
We've had rants about Oshinoko as well, where like those things take anywhere from like 15 to maybe even 30 minutes. So
having
a dedicated episode where we
can talk about bullying, right? With Oshinoko.
The mother of.
Yeah, I lost my fucking mind there too. Oh my god.
So those kinds of good discussions, those kinds of news coverage episodes, we will be experimenting on like how often we do them and, you know, for how long, you know, in episode length we will be doing those. But that doesn't mean, of course, that, you know, we're going to be completely cutting down on the amount of content that we do. Everything is going to be sort of a little bit more compartmentalized. It does mean that, you know, scheduling can be a bit of a kerfuffle for us. But look, we're going to do the best we can.
Our problem to deal with. Yeah. You don't have to worry about that, dear listeners. Yeah.
All you have to do is just tune in every week or two and just listen to our silky voices talking about anime, manga, and everything in between. I'm trying to drag out time because I think Jason's got a...
I really hate it. I'm trying to sneeze. It's like...
You have it stuck, right?
And then now it's gone, and then I'm betting my life that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, boom. Okay, anyways, now that that's out of the way... Oh, we gave you the rundown of how we are going to do things. There's also more changes incoming, but you will see it as we go. But let's talk about our main discussion topic,
which is ASAP 4. Now, one thing we should also mention before we go into the actual manga is that given the big reception that we've had from the listeners, thank you all, in terms of how popular or how, you know, well-received the ASAP series has been, we decided we could change. So because of the fact that every season there will be, of course, new anime coming out, it would be, you know, remiss of us to not highlight more manga in preparation for those upcoming seasons. So rather than doing one ASAP per season, we're now upping it to two. So that does mean that, you know, for each ASAP, we are going to be cutting it down from 5 series to 4 series, but because we'll be doing it twice every season, we're actually covering more manga series, per GAP season. That works out pretty well for us.
I mean, that's just math.
Yeah.
So,
2 + 2 + 4, right?
I don't know.
-1, that's 3. Quick maths.
Isn't it?
Man, I don't know if anybody remembers that meme. Anyways.
I have no idea what you're talking about, I'll be honest.
I'll show you later.
Yeah, okay. Anyways, let's get into it. Enough rambling for the both of us and preamble. We are ready to go in for ASAP 4. So, we have now featured 4 mangas this time around, and should we just start?
Let's do it like in the order of how it's written in the docket, so that it's just, you know, easier for us to, you know, go through the flow of this discussion.
Sure, not a problem.
I think probably it would be great to talk about potentially I wouldn't say the most anticipated. The only reason why I say that is because in terms of its score, its stats on my anime list, it ranks insanely high. So the series that we wanted to start off with is called A Sign of Affection, which is a manga series, ongoing manga series of the same name by Su Morishita. They did both the story and art, originally published in English in Dessert, and also digitally published in English by Kodansha Comics USA as of, since 2020, March 31st, and in print as well the year following that. So the stats, I'll kind of just brush over them because I whilst the score is insanely high, I also don't want that to be like the main barometer of how this manga adaptation should be received. But in terms of its raw score, it sits at an 8.46, ranked 169 with a popularity of 459. So A Sign of Affection scores really, really, really highly. And the one thing that also works in its favor in terms of, you know, despite it having a relatively low popularity compared to some of the manga series we might have talked about, it's a shoujo manga. And shoujo manga have like a weird kind of place in the overall manga landscape because there's a lot of shoujo manga, but not a lot of them ever really get into English syndication. So you don't really see a lot of manga, like shoujo manga, that get digitally or even in print, like published in English. And when you do, it's kind of love hate. Some of them are like kind of like very mid, like low sixes, maybe high sixes. But then you have some that are on the opposite end of the scale, being like eights, nines, close to tens.
I mean, I would argue, as someone who reads like a shit ton of shoujo manga, it's like the isekai thing of there is a lot. You could say some are more catered to certain demographics. I won't get into that discussion, but there's just a lot of guilty pleasure trash, you know, like isekais. There's a, like, for example, I wouldn't consider, you know, going off of like the isekai real quick, farming life isekai, farming in another dimension. I like that Harvest Moon type feel, but I wouldn't put it at a very highly rated manga or anime.
Yeah,
but, well, and there's a shit ton of those.
Because I think copies. As well, it's like with these kind, with those kinds of manga series, it's for a pretty specific demographic or a very specific type of person who's looking for an agricultural isekai. That's in terms of what isekais are, I wouldn't even consider that to be a top 5, maybe even top 10 subgenre within the isekai genre.
And there's so many of them. And just like with shoujo, there is like a lot. A lot. And as Will mentioned, there are some that are outstanding. I think Will likes My Little Monster a lot, and that is one of them that is ranked really high. That's a shoujo manga.
Fruits Basket,
and they remade it, and it's one of the best animes of all time now. So
Orin High School Host Club.
Yes.
Right? Like, I really love that anime series, so.
Yeah, and A Sign of Affection is in the latter camp of being extremely outstanding, because not only that is ranked really high on my anime list, but I think the Japanese like critical reception has been pretty high, winning.
Yeah, why don't you list off some of the awards it's won?
I mean, it's fucking insane. Like, the 2020 Next Manga Award, it was ranked 17th overall. Kono Manga ga Sugoi, which we always use quite a lot, 2021 edition was ranked 9.
For female readers.
Correct. And it was also nominated for the 45th Kodansha Manga Awards. It was nominated again in 2022. Like, I mean, basically, it's top tier. And they have an anime announced, done by Ajiado. It is coming very, very soon, January 6, 2024. So winter 2024. And produced by Ajiado, as I mentioned. Ajiado basically being the main studio that did Ascendance of a Bookworm, Kagushi Goto, which I think, Will, you watched.
And I watched, I liked it.
And I think it's really, really good. I heard really good things. Sorry, I just haven't read it
yet. But outside of that, though, it's not like they've done a whole lot. As a studio that had been producing stuff from like the late 80s through till now, I'd say like they haven't had that many productions, but That's not necessarily like representative of the quality of the work they do.
And I guess there could be a lot of chances where they are like the second or supporting studio. So they're kind of doing like not outsourcing work, but yeah, actually outsourcing work. Just not outsourcing to, you know, what do you call it? Like a third party.
There's support, basically.
Yeah, support, yeah. Right. So we don't know that for sure. Or at least we don't have it in front of us. Okay. And the director of the anime is the director of Kagushi Goto, which I think off the bat is a very good choice.
It offers a lot of like, you know, continuity in terms of who has worked with Ajiado. Like, if they've worked on previous works, it should mean that, you know, there's at least a good sort of synergy, a good level of collaboration between director and studio. So you would hope that with that kind of experience working together, to be able to cohesively put together this anime adaptation.
Yep. So the director, just to give credit, is Yuta Murano. And then I guess the two other things that I would like to mention in terms of staff would be the music, because music is a very big deal in shoujo and all of these slice of lives. And Yukari Hashimoto, who is composing the music and is known for doing March Comes in Like a Lion. So that's a big deal. And then the other thing, the last one I would like to mention is the person in charge of the script and series composition. So another big role is done by Yoko Yonayama, sorry, who did Kome.
Yeah, your boy Kang Ming.
Your boy Kang Ming. Papa.
Pretty Kome.
Yep. So all off the bat, kind of the main figureheads of the shows are, in my opinion, pretty big names. So that's a lot to look forward to. There's also a trailer up officially, and the plot synopsis, we'll kind of give it to you. It is essentially...
Yeah, we'll give you like an abridged version of what we got from Wikipedia.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think it's extremely... Shoujo, it's like, what else is there to say other than it is about college life and it is about a girl and a guy. The girl is Yuki, and what is so interesting, like what is the shtick this time around, what is the gimmick, so to speak, is that she is hard of hearing. She's hearing impaired. And it talks about her life, her romantic feelings that is kind of bubbling up. And it is kind of interesting to see her development and the manga and the journey that she goes through.
Sure, not talking about a silent voice. I think that that's the, that would be like the straight up comparison in terms of like what is a sign of affection and how does it compare to, for example, a silent voice. So one thing that should be known as well is that it's not like we're the only ones. We're not, of course, like soothsayers or like, you know, oracles and saying like, oh, there's definitely comparison between two. There are also other syndications, other news agencies that have kind of covered it and said, yeah, you know what? Like there is some similarity to Silent Voice, but nonetheless, it's still a very beautifully drawn and written manga. So I don't think that there's necessarily a need to be like, well, which one's better if I want to talk about romance with a girl that's hard of hearing?
You know? I would argue that A Silent Voice is way more dramatic and way more heavy. Yeah. And A Sign of Affection is more bubbly and lighthearted. But
you still have to like acknowledge that at the core of it, there is that similarity between the two. Which is why it's also like also good for us to be able to sort of not separate them, but like not use use A Silent Voice as a barometer of how good A Sign of Affection will be.
Yeah, and one thing I do want to mention, just similar with A Silent Voice kind of getting a lot of consulting from the deaf community in Japan, Su Morishita has also did her own research for, you know, hard of hearing or deaf people. And personally, as in me, Jason, I learned American Sign Language and I used to TA it at Purdue University at one point. So I'm pretty into sign language, at least the American variant. And at least I know quite a bit about CODA, for example, which is like children of deaf adults. And I guess this time it's the other way around, where like Yuki is the hard of hearing one and their parents are kind of are fine. So it's interesting that there's a lot of thought put literally into the words that are used, actually, which is kind of odd that you won't see every day, but it is done in a way that I think was very seamless and very well done.
Yeah. So at the crux of this this manga series, I'll soon be adapted into an anime. Yeah, keep check. It will be coming out on January 6th. So it primarily focuses on the sort of journey that Yuki goes through in terms of how to internalize emotions, but at the same time, how to express them. Now, given the fact that she is hard of hearing and communication ability is definitely limited, I think that's the sort of focus in terms of, you know, how are we supposed to see a romance played out if there really are no words spoken. Now, of course, you know, with manga, you can read it, but you can definitely see the difficulties that Yuki goes through in terms of trying to hear people. Yes, she does have a hearing aid, but it's not necessarily meaning that, like, once you have it on, you can hear everything. It's just that you're able to make out more noise than usual, but that's the key word there, noise. Just because then you have someone talking to you, it doesn't mean that you're able to decipher it as actual speech. It could just be, you know, mumbled, it could be frayed. It's not always straightforward that if someone's speaking to you with a hearing aid, that you are able to fully interpret what they're saying. So there's a lot of, like, need for use of like basic sign language, maybe some lip reading, but all
also
those
writing on like a board,
or like using texts and all that. Mm-hmm. So in essence, it's essentially trying to play out a romance story between two people where communication is pretty much broken. Not in the sense that they don't talk to each other. It's just the fact that like if one person can't speak or hear, and how the hell like the main foundation when it comes to any relationship, any sort of romantic pairing, would be communication. If that's, you know, lacking, then how do these two come together? How do they actually manage to foster any sort of feelings for each other? Is it going to be one directional? Because in Yuki's sense, she might be able to internalize what people are saying, but she's not able to reciprocate it.
Right. And furthermore, I think in the manga, those kinds of muffled voices are represented by either literally jumbled up words, as in the words are kind of misspelled in a certain way, but you can clearly see what is being said, and it was grayed out. So you can still read it, but then it is different than the very black text that you typically see in speech bubbles. So it will be interesting to see how they would translate that into the anime. My guess is if they do that, which I hope they do, they would like muffle the voice in a way so it sounds somewhat subdued, but I have no idea, right?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a lot of post-processing in terms of, you know, muffling the voices, maybe like having the person speak further away from a microphone so that, you know, it picks up some speech, but it's not super clear.
Because I like that attention to detail, that it is very much present in the manga that I hope will be present in the anime, but I have no way to know, and the trailer just seems fine. It looks very pretty. But Will, what do you think of the manga?
So immediately when reading it, I mean, and this is no slate on A Sign of Affection, cliches to the fucking ceiling, dude. Like there's like the silver haired, like suave but very quiet guy. It makes sense as well, you know, to have a very quiet person talking to somebody who literally is hard of hearing. And, you know, I think a lot of those sort of like romantic tropes that exist in this specific genre within shoujo manga, you definitely would have seen it before. So if you're into this specific area of shoujo, I don't think that there's going to be anything here that is going to be like different, which is in this sense good, because if you like this stuff, you want more of the same thing. I thought that the art style was done, to be fair. I find it kind of hard to really see much difference in a lot of shoujo manga, but that could also be said with all different kinds of manga series. I think that once you have like a standard outline of how characters are designed, like whenever you watch any anime, you can tell it's an anime because all of them have a similar frame of reference, right? Now, one thing that and this is just a very nitpick in terms of like the cliche of all cliches, and this is not necessarily, is it a spoiler? I'll say it anyway.
Well, it's the first volume, right?
The main character is called Yuki. Yes. And one of the most meaningful sort of like situations that happens between Yuki and the male counterpart Rin Fushiro. No, sorry, not Rin.
No,
it's Itsumi Nagi. Yeah, that's the one. It's snowing.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
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 That shit's fucking lame.
Okay. I mean, I get you.
Yeah.
Like, it's stereotypical.
It's way too stereotypical. I mean, again, this is Japan. A lot of Japanese stuff. I mean, that's why you have, like, blue in a lot of manga series names, because it's the same it's the same kanji for teenager. So I totally get that if you're going to be doing naming conventions, that you're probably going to go something with cliche. I just thought that was just boring.
And you're kind of stuck in a rock and a hard place, because you could go against the grain and not have those stereotypes and not have those typical kind of stuff, right? But then along the same lines, you could say, hey, why didn't you include those pivotal scenes? Why?
Like, if you're going to be cliche, you might as well double down.
Oh, a high school anime, but you don't have a school festival arc? You don't have, like, the student council show up? What kind of high school anime are you then?
Well, I think, like, that is, like, trope of all tropes. I think it's just one of those kind of motifs where it's like you have a character that's named after a specific weather condition, and you put a very romantic situation where that romantic where that weather condition exists. You know, it's I thought it was not lazy, but just eh.
All right.
But that's, again, like a very nitpicky criticism that I have of the series. Other than that, I think that it is a very, very well done manga series, it will be very interesting to see how the series actually plays out as an anime, because, and this is just my opinion as well, I think it looks, like, aesthetically, average.
You mean the manga?
No, in terms of, like, how it will look in terms of it being adapted into an anime, because I watched the trailer.
Yeah?
And I, it kind of looks eh for me, to be perfectly honest.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think that there's certain sort of, like, shadings that characters have. There's certain sort of, like, animation, like, frames where it's not as smooth or well done, in my opinion. But I also get that that's maybe not, like, the specific focus of this particular genre. Well, I will say, though, is that, you know, in terms of, like, color contrasts, yeah, no, they made the guy's silver hair incredibly bright. They make her pink hair incredibly fluorescent. So in terms of, like, that particular aesthetic, in terms of, like, color, I thought it was done well. And to be fair, Ajiado do that quite well. Like, a sentence of a bookworm is very vibrant in colors. It's just not known for smooth animation. Maybe that's, you know, something that people would like to see, but you also shouldn't be expecting it from this particular kind of series.
So, okay. I mean, that's fair. I think also Ajiado is a shoujo series, so you don't usually would see very much money being poured into the frames of animation because it's not like a shonen action, for example, right? Because I think you're right. I saw the trailer as well. We kind of put it up just now for us to watch. I think the colors are very vibrant and very obvious. And by obvious, I mean, yes, she's pink. He's blue with gray hair. It is very much like a contrast in that sense. But on the other hand, I feel that it looks very nice. It looks very sharp and pretty. And I have nothing but good things to say about the manga. I read up to current, so there are like 30 chapters, so like volume 7. And I would say in the realm of shoujo manga and anime, one of the things that, for me at least, is a pet peeve is when people don't talk it out and sort shit out. Or you don't hear their internal monologue, so you just assume one way because you'd have no frame of reference. And the thing I like about A Sign of Affection is it kind of progresses the romance, and not only that, but it is also they confront, they talk, and whenever something pops up, a conflict happens, they resolve it, they talk it out. And those are one of the things that I just feel that a lot of shoujo mangas, it's hard to get right because you either would sound too melodramatic or they just sound too fake. And the way that I like A Sign of Affection is it takes its time. It's very warm, lighthearted, and it's also very mature. They're all university students, so the way that they handle things could be a little bit childish, but more often than not, they kind of, to me, seem like adults. And they deal with love and affection and relationships of any sort in kind of a more mature way than your typical shoujo anime or manga that you might be exposed to. So that, I think that's why I really love the manga. And I think the anime will do extremely well. And I think a lot of people should read the manga.
Now, in terms of extremely well, like, how would you define that?
What do you mean by extremely well? Like,
well, I mean, that's what I'm asking you. What do you mean by extremely well?
As in my anime list, it will score pretty high, I would say.
I don't know. The thing that I notice as well when it comes to shoujo, and this is, again, not a slight on shoujo, it's a very small sort of demographic in terms of the wider landscape of anime, in which case there is a chance where it scores as high as, like, an Oran High School Host Club or a Fruits Basket. But there's also a chance that it is more middling. Now, that's not to say that it's going to be like a 6. I highly doubt it will be anything down that low. But I think anything above a 7.5 is probably like the bottom line of where this would be.
Oh, I think that's the minimum.
Yeah, exactly. I think in essence, it's because of the fact that like how it would score should be quite high. How popular it would be is that's to be determined.
And to me, I think the way that they execute kind of what I think made the manga really good was displaying the hard of hearing part, the hearing impairedness, and navigating it together as a couple. And I think those are one of the things that the manga does really well, that it's not in your face, and it's there, but it's there. And it's a part of Yuki's daily life. And it really like balances between not being too overt, but not just using it as some gimmick. It's like a part of Yuki, it's a part of the manga. And if the anime doesn't take advantage of that, in my opinion, I think it's a really bad look.
Now, it's been running for just under four years, actually. Just over 4 years, actually. So, given the fact that now there's over 9 volumes, one that should be coming out fairly soon, do you feel that this is a series that would get a second season?
Hell no. I'm sorry. No. As much as I love it, no. I just don't think it, as you said, right, shoujo, it's tough. And I think the manga is kind of the main bread and butter of this IP.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no way that I can envision this being a second or third season. I think they just do one and done. Everyone will be like, oh, I wish it got a second season.
Like, you think this is going to be more like Oren High School Host Club as opposed to Fruits Basket, where it's like, it's well received, but beyond that one season, you're better off just sticking to the manga.
Yeah, it'll be like, oh, that is really, it's one of those, it's really good season. Oh, it did really well. Okay, I'll go read the manga now. And maybe hope that there will be a season 2, but it'll never show.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, in terms of the studio they picked as well, I think the only, like, major series that they actually have continuations with is Ascent of the Bookworm. But
that's a huge IP, right?
That, and also, they're not doing
too good.
Yeah, no. They're not doing Ascent of a Bookworm anymore, Ajiado. It's moved over to Wit Studio now.
Oh, yeah. They changed hands, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of tough, especially, for example, Will, you, of at least in my mind, most recently, My Little Monster is an anime that you really like, right?
And unfortunately, there's no more than just the one season.
Exactly. I can list literally like a lot of shoujo manga series that has an anime, and those mangas are like 8+ on my anime list, and they only get one season because that's just kind of how it is. Advertise the source, done deal. But one is better than none.
If you're
going to
put your money, like, you know, where your mouth is, you would bet that if it is just the one season, and it's very likely it'll be just one season, it's going to be a very good season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
Yep. I think this is an above average showing. It will be. At least I hope.
Minimum 7.5. Like anything lower would be criminal for it.
If they mess up the hearing part and the hearing impairedness.
That's true. Because we never saw any of that.
Yeah, because it's only like the trailer's like the girl's monologue, right? So like, how are you going to play the rest of that out? I think it's doing a disservice to the manga. And I think it might offend some people because it's kind of like, oh, so you're watering it down. So we'll have to see. Yeah. I don't think they'll drop the ball, but who knows?
I think for sure, like, if you're going to be releasing something that does revolve around a relatively sensitive topic, that you have to have done your research beforehand, right? I don't think this is going to be a lazy series for them to just, you know, we'll just make things sound ruffled, and then that's it, right? They really do have to display the intricacies of communicating with somebody who is hearing impaired and how that person also reciprocates communication back, so I don't doubt that they would have done the research. It's, again, like you said, the execution.
Yeah, because I would argue A Silent Voice, which I think a lot of people, as we mentioned, would kind of gravitate to being the other anime series movie that features very prominently a hearing impaired or deaf female protagonist. If you actually think about it, A Silent Voice being a 10 out of 10 movie in my mind, one of the greatest of all time, they actually don't focus that much on the intricacies of sign language and deafness. It's more of like bullying, if you think about it.
The
right?
Emotional side.
Yeah. Whereas I would say A Sign of Affection is the opposite. They really lean into how someone would navigate and communicate, interact with someone who is hard of hearing or deaf.
It's the fact that they focus on the technicality of, you know, communication with a hearing impaired person that really does highlight the importance of actually delivering like good lines of speech in terms of like the anime, right? It's done well in the manga, right? Let's see if they're able to, you know, keep the ball rolling and actually roll out something that doesn't piss people off.
I'm optimistic. I'll just say that.
Yeah, definitely. You're not like cautiously optimistic. You think that if they're actually going to be doing this, they must have done the research and gotten the green light in terms of like, yeah, you guys are good to go ahead with this. Let's roll.
I'll be super pissed if they don't. Yeah. I'll just say that. All right. Now on to our second of our four manga series that we're going to talk about. This time, I think this one is actually quite an interesting one that we picked. It is The Elusive Samurai. It is based on the ongoing manga series of the same name by Yusei Matsui, who did the story and the art, originally published in none other than Weekly Shonen Jump, published in English as The Elusive Samurai through Manga Plus, Jump Plus, so you can read it. I read it through there. And the volumes have been published in English by Viz Media, obviously. So here's the interesting part. Has a raw MAL score of 6.46.
Popularity, 1,854. Only 10,000 members following the manga. Now, again, manga popularity, it's always a bit of a crapshoot, but the raw score is the thing that we, on initial inspection, should be concerned with.
Correct. So there is an anime, again, premiering in 2024, but there's no confirmed season or release date yet. And here's the other interesting part. It is produced by Cloverworks.
Yep. They've got a pretty hefty staff list, right? So Yuta Yamazaki, who was the assistant director for Wonder Egg Priority, which was also done by Cloverworks, is going to be running the show. They're going to be helming the anime alongside Yoriko Tomita, who did My Dress Up Darling, also done by Cloverworks, in terms of, you know, doing the series composition. The last a person of note is Yasufumi Nishitani, who did the character designs for Ni no Kuni, the anime film, not the game.
Right, but the anime is based on the game, yes. There is a VA list, but we won't really get into that, other than it is a lot of well-known talent. And the story of Elusive Samurai is pretty interesting because when I was reading it, before I was reading it, right, I was seeing the score, and I was just like, oh, shit.
See, you read it knowing what the score was. I read it not even knowing what the score was. So she didn't even know. I only just knew after, like, opening the docket today.
Oh, okay. I had to plan, so I had to, like, yeah.
So before we go into our different experiences, even though we read the same thing, it focuses on Tokiyuki Hojo, an 8-year-old boy who is, you know, supposed to be the next successor of the Kamakura shogunate. Now, one day, all of a sudden, his world gets turned upside down. He was living a very carefree sort of, you know, lackluster life. He's just very well known to be somebody who knows how to run away from things. He's very good at hiding and seeking. That life just suddenly just gets all fucked up because of a brutal, brutal warlord named Takuuchi Ashikaga, who essentially ascends the throne and takes over the Kamakuras and ends their reign. Now, all of a sudden, a young boy just thrown into danger, not knowing what the fuck's going on. The only thing he knows how to do is run. Just run away as far as he can. Until he again gets rescued by a prophetic priest who has sort of future-telling mystic powers.
Foresight, yeah.
And essentially tells him, look, you managed to escape this one, but it's not just escaping you're good at. You have the path to becoming the emperor of Japan. You can take over and regain the throne within Kamakura. So that then sets off the story of Tokiyuki and how this, you know, this little quote unquote chicken shit boy is supposedly going to be returning the Kamakura shogunate to its former glory.
So one thing that I would like to emphasize is hearing, you know, shogunate and all that kind of stuff, it is set in, like, feudal Japan.
It's set in the 1300s, yeah.
And you can obviously see that when you read the chapter list, because they literally list out the year in which, I think it starts in 1333.
Yep.
And then they kind of go onwards, and then they have, like, a little blurb, like, a certain word, which is kind of, like, the theme of that chapter, and then the year. At least that's the ones that I've read. The other thing that I also want to mention is during that time, you have to consider the historical significance of kind of like the samurai code. Was it the Bishodo way?
Yep.
The code of honor and ethics. Because Hojo is essentially this kid who runs away, very good at dodging, very good at you know, like being,
I mean, it, elusive.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Hence, that is kind of the polar opposite of the honor, the code of honor, because you need to face danger head on.
It's that oxymoron in the title where it's just like, why are you running away from battle? And the story revolves around how he uses that to his advantage to actually become a well-respected, well-renowned warrior in terms of restoring his family's name and ascending and taking back the throne that was grabbed from him in the turmoils of war. So now I read this without knowing the score, but I did do a lot of sort of like background reading in terms of the story, because a lot of times whenever you're watching stuff or reading stuff that is based on historical events, you gotta wonder, like, you know, is there any historical significance? Are these actually real people? And yes, Tokuyuki Hojo was a real person. He had been, well, I don't want to go that deep into the history of this person. All the people, well, most of the people that are featured in this manga series, soon to be adapted into an anime, are based on real life people. And so when you see, for example, Takuichi Ashikaga, yes, in real life, he was a menacing warlord. Whenever you see other members of his army, yes, they were also based off of the corresponding real life person that existed during that time.
And also shout outs to the compiled volumes, because at the end, you know, they put like a author's notes kind of thing. And they actually talk about that volume, what the historical events are, the certain characters. Like, there is a very, like, very early on, I won't say who, betrays certain someone. And then they mention that in terms of, like, the author's notes and then how it differs from essentially historical, like, Japanese history versus, yes, like, their art, the mangaka's interpretation.
Yes, it should be noted that this is loosely based on the life of Tokuyuki Hojo, not a word-for-word documentation of what this person actually did and then turned into a manga.
So it's like a hybrid fiction, non-fictional kind of take.
Yeah, because in the real-life story, it's a lot more gruesome and bloody.
So, Will, do you want me to give you my take, or you want to tell me your take first?
You go ahead. You knew what you were getting yourself into beforehand. You checked the mal entry. You saw the drastically low score. You thought, you know, damn, this could potentially be a train wreck, right? So, what was your overall experience in terms of reading? What are your pointers in terms of, you know, what you got from reading A List of Samurai?
I was very pleasantly surprised. I think we shouldn't. Generally, we use scores as a barometer, and whether or not those scores are accurate for us or for, you know, our individual tastes, you know, varies for each individual IP and project. I think in this case, I can see actually why someone or a group of people would rate on my anime list kind of low for Elusive Samurai. I gave it kind of like an 8.5 out of 10. And I think Elusive Samurai does something that I think is rather interesting, is the art style is very unique, because it reminds me of when I was reading it. First of all, I was going to only read one volume, and then I ended up reading like five. Okay, stay with me here, Will. When I read Elusive Samurai, two things came to mind. This is an MMO, World of Warcraft RPG, mixed with animation and art styles, some akin to kind of like Ren and Stimpy. And I'll explain why. So first of all, being elusive, kind of like having high dodge capabilities, right? So if you think about like, you know, a party of like, you know, D&D or like an MMORPG, there is always like a tank, a healer, and like people who do damage, like DPS, right? You're familiar with that configuration, Will. And I think Hojo is essentially like a tank because he kind of gets the aggro, especially in the earlier chapters, and dodges, kind of takes the heat so then others can kind of do the damage or do the strategizing. Because after all, he's still just a fucking 8-year-old kid. But at the end of the day, he learns to how to become essentially the prophets prophesized him to be, as well as using something that is against kind of the code of ethics and the code of honor in that historical time and flip it on its head. And it's kind of very interesting to see how it goes. What I also will say, though, is the villains are drawn in such a way that it looks really weird, like Ren and Stimpy. At least that's how it comes to me, like very cartoony. And I'm not saying that the art style is bad, but it's just very eye-catching when they have certain like panels where
it's very exaggerated in terms of like facial expressions, character designs. I can see that. Not as crazy as Ren and Stimpy, because that is the pinnacle of like what the fuck am I watching? But like,
right.
I can totally see where you're coming from.
Like, there's a villain that uses eyesight very well. I don't know if that was in the first volume.
Was it? It was.
And that person's eyes are almost like bulging out, you know? And it looks very uncomfortable, and obviously because he's a villain, right?
Well, also emphasis on the eyes as well.
And that made me kind of that's where I kind of went on the lines of the Ren and Stimpy stuff, like very exaggerated, cartoony in the realm of anime and manga. And obviously the priest has some very odd expressions. So, and it's also very kind of comedic that you get a lot of shonen action slapstick comedy from. And I think they do it relatively well. So I actually quite liked it.
When you compared it to World of Warcraft, or like at least like the MMORPG kind of format, I could kind of see it. What I would say, though, actually, at least in my opinion, as a comparison to a game, it's Sekiro. It's literally Sekiro. You spend the whole game just dodging and running away from shit. And every single chapter that comes through, there is always a villain reveal. There is like the villain of the week, the monster of the week kind of thing. And then, you know, whenever you like enter a new zone and you're about to like face off against like a sub boss or a boss, it does that cinematic zoom in, and then that little graphic of that character, like, oh, I'm ready to fucking slay you and cut your head off. That's how I felt when reading this. This basically plays out as a lighthearted, quote unquote, kind of version of Sekiro.
That being said, Elusive Samurai, very bloody, actually.
Like, the first chapter alone as well, it's like, I was totally not expecting that. There is a lot of violence in this. I think when you're talking about the Ren and Stimpy part, I think it's actually kind of like kind of good that you highlighted in terms of like the over the top, the exaggerated facial expressions of these characters, because it juxtaposes in terms of like this literal 8-year-old boy just running around and, you know, trying to, you know, save his own neck, but also like nonchalantly doing that because he knows he's really good at running away.
Yeah, and when people smile in that manga, it's unsettling, even if they're smiling like genuinely, like not putting on a facade. Like, it just makes me feel uncomfortable. And they allude to in our main character Hojo, he's actually not just prophesized to be like a very big hero of sorts that is going to redeem his family bloodline and stuff. Like, he actually has shades of kind of being a psychopath too, of sorts. And you get shades of that. Obviously, he is our protagonist, and he is very honorable, very nice, and humble, and that is like a very good judge of what you would consider
of character.
But he's also on a revenge mission.
Correct. And there are certain things that he does, like type A personality, let's just say, that makes you go like, if like one or two things were to be different to this fictional character, this person will basically be a psychopath. So it's interesting to see kind of how you would also navigate being a guy that essentially dodges everything and how you win in battles. It's quite interesting to me.
Now, with the adaptation being handled by CloverWorks, there is
a mixed bag.
Pretty much one thing guaranteed. It's going to look fantastic. However, we haven't seen a trailer. All they've done is an announcement trailer, which just shows like little silhouettes and like manga panels and whatnot. So you don't actually get to see how the character design actually looks. But
no, there is.
There is like a character trailer.
When
did that come out? Because I literally looked it up last night. And
this one, it's like 30 seconds.
That's just a character. That doesn't show anything, though. That's
what I said. It's a character trailer.
You know, but it's a character trailer. We're not seeing like full animation. You're not actually seeing like what things look like outside. Right there. Those are just silhouettes. That's just basically showing you how it will look in color. You don't actually get to see how it actually looks when it's in flowing animation.
Fair. No, you're right. No, yeah. Absolutely, you're right.
Yeah. So I think like when you said mixed bag, it depends on what you mean by mixed bag, because...
What do you think I mean, or what would you interpret that?
I think you're probably going to be talking about Wonder Egg Priority.
No.
Right? What's the mixed bag in terms of... Well, is it going to be like Tokyo 24th Ward? Where's the mixed bag here?
The mixed bag is just based on the static image. Again, Will is being very accurate in saying that we only have essentially two teasers and no fluid animation of sorts. But I think based on that static image, you can at least kind of see a little bit more than not seeing anything whatsoever. And here's my hot take. I think it will look great. I don't think it will be good for the anime. Because, yes, the static image is static image, but it looks very sharp, very presentable. It does CloverWorks stuff. It's completely polar opposite to how I consider it looking compared to the manga. What is that gambler anime manga series?
Kaiji?
Yeah. The manga reminds me a bit more of what Kaiji is kind of like. Whereas this, the way that CloverWorks plays it straight.
Again, I think that you're also talking about Kaiji, where every character has very exaggerated facial expressions and big-ass noses. Whereas this, Toriyuki just looks normal. I can't imagine it to be that much more drastic. If you're talking about like the facial expressions itself, hey, look, they've done Shadow's House before. They've done some weird shit. I mean, you've seen some weird-ass shit in Wonder Egg Priority as well. I think that they'll still be able to retain some of that crazy, like, Ren and Snippy-esque animation, but it'll probably be toned down, right? Yeah. I think in general, like you've definitely seen like those kinds of like panel to panel comparisons of like a anime compared to how it looked in the manga, and yes, it's definitely more toned down. Right? The violence we saw in the first chapter, yeah, I don't think we're going to be seeing a whole lot of that, right?
But we don't know for a fact.
But I still think that give credit where credit's due. I think that CloverWorks is still going to produce a wonderful visual spectacle for us.
I think yes, for sure. Because going off of like a lot of almost, I would say actually all of CloverWorks works, one thing that you cannot dispute is that
you can't dispute for Tokyo 24th Ward.
But it still looks sharp.
And
the 3D, right?
I think it was just the fact that it was so If that was like the lowest bar of work, then sure, okay, fine. Like it still looks better.
It
still looks better than a lot of other stuff. But like, damn, that was hot trash. But everything else, yeah. Right? Everything else looked great. I mean, you even watched Kunichi Tsubaki, right? And
yeah,
whilst that was a very mid show, it looked good, right?
Yeah, very fluid animation. There's nothing that I think would prevent me from saying that it won't be a competent anime.
The thing is, also, again, CloverWorks, in my opinion, does very well when it's not an original anime or original content, you know? If you think about, you know, second season of Promised Neverland, Tokyo 24th Ward, Wonder Egg Priority even kind of fall flat on its face towards the end. But this is a source with a lot of content to adapt. And traditionally speaking, CloverWorks has done very well on that front if it's adapted. So, I mean, I'm just speculating here, but I think it's easier to see CloverWorks doing a better job of adapting Elusive Samurai than, let's say, making anime original content for Elusive Samurai. You know, kind of like Promised Neverland in that sense.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is, though, that I'm very optimistic, just not, I don't know.
Not 100% confident.
I also don't know, like 6.46, I think that's criminal. What do you think?
Well, let me put it this way. Ranking of Kings is one of the highest rated anime of all time. When it aired, the manga didn't even have a score.
Right.
I'll just say that.
Right, but this is on Shonen Weekly Jump, so it's kind of like a big deal, and at the very least, right? To being
still doesn't disprove my point, though. Where, like, I don't think that a score for the manga naturally represents how the anime is going to turn out. Yes, it's on a big platform, but it's also, like, you got a lot of other stuff on Shonen Jump, too. So there must be a reason as to why they picked this one to be
adapted
to.
I just don't know why.
Well, I mean, did you like reading the manga?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
But I would have picked, like, Sakamoto Days.
It's been going down, actually, in terms of, like, viewership.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think it also just because of the fact that they don't want to dilute it with, like, two spy assassin shows.
Maybe.
You know? I don't see any reason why it wouldn't get adapted. You there's always, like, something that just comes out of the bucket list and just be like, I guess that's getting animated. And we never saw that coming.
Yeah, and we'll never know the real reason.
And it ends up being a success. So, I'm not saying this will be, but given the trends of picking an anime that to adapt based off a manga that either has a super low score or was, like, so non-existent that nobody even knew about it, there's every chance in the world that this is a good series. I'm not going to say a great series because I can definitely see some flaws in this, right? In terms of, like, its pacing, in terms of the character interactions, I think as well, like, again, it's an action-adventure series. And this is the point where I think Jason comes across of is, this is fucking Shonen Jump. It's literally built on action-adventure. So this series, Elusive Samurai, if to be adapted and to be successful, has a huge mountain to climb. So there's a lot of stuff that's working against it.
Right? I'm just really worried when your trailers are static images and you are a weekly Shonen Jump property.
Well,
that is,
but I mean, at the same time, like, they haven't said when they're going to be releasing it, right?
2024.
Yeah, 2024, but when 2024? Right. Well, it could literally be, like, fall 2024. It could be summer 2024. I mean, 6 months out. Most of these teaser trailers only come out 1 or 2 months before it gets released anyway.
Right. I'm just saying that based on what I can see.
Yeah. Because, again, but that's, like, again, like, you're only basing on what you have right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. So, yeah. So, I mean, and there's not enough for me to be like, oh, yeah, this is going to be great. Because I have no proof. I just think it will be good.
Yeah. But again, it's like you're...
And I think
I hate that you do this as well because you need to have all the information needed to be able to make a judgment. But
why is that... I'm giving you my judgment now, though.
But it's judgment based off of very limited knowledge where it's like, at the very least, you could do, like, some speculation.
You could at least
give some hope in terms of, like, this still being good. I mean, like...
I never said it was bad. I just said it won't be great. I think I just said literally 10 seconds ago it would be good.
Yeah.
But I am worried. There's no fluid animation. You're correct. It's all static image, and it's very different than the art style of the manga.
Yeah. I think one thing that we have in agreement is that this will be a hopefully good series. Great. That's a bit of a stretch because, you know, I agree with Jason there too that, you know, we really don't have a whole lot to, you know, see if this will turn out to be a great animation. But at the very least, when it comes to how the manga plays out, I think that it would be criminal of anybody to just focus on the manga score and just, you know, not even give it a chance. I think that if you are worried for how the anime is going to turn out, at least just give it a shot.
Well, read the manga. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it whenever it airs on 2024. That is, if it doesn't get delayed, right? Maybe that's the reason why we haven't really seen anything yet, because they're not sure. Who knows, right? There's so many reasons.
Well, again, it's also like you have we have no idea how the adaptation process is going to work out. I mean, shit, like which atelier, like, you know, we still don't have anything from them either.
Holy fuck, guys.
And that's been announced for like almost a year and a half, right? So
they don't even have a studio, I think.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, and then Pluto got announced fucking ages ago, and then only like recently is an anime premiere. So of course, things are hard to tell. I also think, last thing though, do you think that the historical setting of it might hurt reception? And I don't mean like it being a bad show. I mean like, because personally, I don't really care for historical animes or mangas. I'm not saying
unless
it's
your boy Kang Ming, right?
Well, that's kind of like a reverse isekai, right? Because that's like a half.
But it's also like, you know, like going back in terms of like, oh, during my time as a warlord or as like a, you know, a tactician, this is how I did things. It's like
I think it's great in terms of reception. And I know it's the Three Kingdoms, but I also know a lot of people, oh my God, it's the Three Kingdoms. Oh, it's about this samurai. Oh, it's about shogunates. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah, but I mean, that didn't stop it from being one of the most popular series of all time, right? So I think with this... excuse me. To put focus on the historical part, you wouldn't be wrong to do that, just because of the fact that they literally tell you the year that each chapter is going through, right?
Yeah.
And also giving you backstory for each person that shows up. Remember, each main character that shows up, they're real people.
Yeah.
And whether or not you choose to read up their history, or if you even think it's going to affect or, you know, enhance your experience of reading this series or watching it when it gets adapted, I don't think it should have a strong effect on whether or not you will like this series. I think that the historical part actually ends up playing more second fiddle compared to the actual adventure part, because the core focus is literally on the ascendance of Tokuyuki Hojo into becoming the next successor of the Karakura Shogunate. If whether or not that does happen, because we don't know. There's only like 13 volumes and we're far from finishing the story.
Yeah. It'll just be interesting because also the protagonist and his retainers, or his like party members, I guess, are all like kids. He's like 8. He's literally 8 in the anime. Well, we'll be 8 in the anime and also in the manga as well. At least starts off as 8. And, dude, kids go through some heavy shit back then. So it's going to be interesting how that plays out for modern audiences, too. Because the manga doesn't hold back on a lot of things. I think there was, like, a archery thing.
Yeah.
And I know that it's the thing there. It's historically significant.
Just from the first 2 chapters alone, there's a lot of really heavy shit.
Yeah.
And it'll be really interesting to see how Cloverworks either chooses to represent it or if they're going to dial it down. Either way, I'm going to say this is going to rank a bit lower than A Sign of Affection, just because I think that there's going to be more eyeballs on this.
I also agree.
And like, but not that far off. I think it will probably be in like the region of like a 7.3, 7.4 when it starts out. Whether it grows or drops, that's, you know, let's just see how the season plays out. But I think like a 7.3 would be like respectable.
Yeah, I also agree. But I was surprised by the manga. Like, I actually quite like it.
If you saw that score as being like a 7, you'd be like, yeah, no, that's about right.
Yeah, it's a shonen action. Yeah, sure. Yeah, right? You know?
A 6.46 just seems like, man, there are some people that really don't like this manga.
Or there must be something really flawed about it. But but on the other hand, it's like, it wasn't axed when a lot of other series that some of them even performing,
true,
critically speaking,
true,
on my anime is better. So why did this last out? So I was just so curious.
The fact that it's still on, like, you know, SJ's lineup, hey, it must be doing something right.
I mean, to be on that lineup is already an achievement milestone in of itself as a mangaka, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I'm actually quite happy with the manga. I will watch the anime for sure whenever it comes out in 2024, hopefully. And let's see what Cloverworks has to offer this time around.
Yep. So we'll put a break on this episode. We'll be coming back after the break. We'll be revealing the last two manga series we want to talk about. There's going to be some controversial discussion later on, I'd say.
It's not controversial already? Well,
shit. We are back for the second half of episode 73, going over a manga series that will be getting anime adaptations. Still Will, Still Jason. We had just talked about Sign of Affection and Elusive Samurai, and we'll be going into the last two manga series that will be getting adapted probably sometime in 2024. I think both of them still don't have a confirmed season. It's coming out yet?
Yeah, the only one that actually has a Sign of Affection for winter 2024, but everything else says 2024, but who knows, right? Delays, right?
Yeah, could be spring, summer, fall. Who knows? But at least, at the very least, with what information we have, it should be coming out next year.
That's promotional material. I mean, it could be delayed, but they said 2024 there in the trailer. So what else can we go off of, right? Yeah.
So, all right. Let's go into the third series we'll be discussing today. And this one potentially has some controversial discussion, or at least some differing opinions on how we both feel about, Go-Go Loser Ranger. So this
such
is
a good name, by the way.
Ongoing manga series of the same name by Negi Haruba, who did Destroy and Art, originally published in Weekly Shonen Magazine, so WSM, not WSJ, and published in English by Kodansha USA. Pretty decent score for the manga, 7.3, ranked 4,693. And, popularity could do better, but we're not going to give him any shade for that. 1,146 with only 15,720 members as of whatever was on the docket. So
today,
there you go. So as updated as can be. So we'll go into the adaptation information for it as well. So as mentioned, premiering next year, 2024. No confirmed season yet. This is going to be the interesting part. It's going to be produced by Yo Star Pictures of Art Knights and Azur Lane fame. So, both of them are video games that got adapted into anime. Why the hell is, Yo Star doing an actual manga to anime adaptation? They have done that before, but they definitely don't have like the best track record, though Arc Knights is proving me wrong. Character design going to be done by Kohoko Kaseki. Animation supervisor is Kenji Hayama, who was the chief animation director for Inuyashiki, one of my favorite series. Also from Inuyashiki, the director will be Keiichi Sato. And then the series composition will be done by Keiichiro Uchi, who did Under Ninja. So, with a name like Go-Go Loser Ranger, that definitely is kind of one of those like eye-catching, like, oh, this is going to be some weird-ass anime/manga series. What the hell is this all about? So as a general plot synopsis, many, 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 many years ago, a monster army had invaded Earth, but the protectors of Earth, the Dragon Keepers, managed to kill them off in 1 year. The leaders of the monster army fell before the Dragon Keepers. Ever since that day, they had then made a truce where the monsters, known as fighters/dusters of the monster army, will be kept alive. But every single Sunday, no breaks, just going to be following that schedule, they will be forced to participate in a battle with the Dragon Keepers. But because of the fact that this is a truce, and a lot of this stuff is kind of held behind the cameras, the Dragon Keepers always win. The Monster Army will periodically be beaten every single day throughout, however long they're going to be in this little truce.
Right, because the thing that we have to mention is this arrangement, this show, is unbeknownst to the public. They all think that, this is just, again, the Dragon Keepers are essentially Power Rangers, because that's what the manga title is playing off of. And they essentially are like, they're in on the, it's rigged. Yeah. It's rigged such that, like, there's a spectacle every Sunday showdown, like Sunday night football. There are cameras. They get interviews. And almost nothing bad happens from the humanity side. But our story actually doesn't take place from the perspective of the Dragon Keepers or humanity. It is actually from the other side. So one of the Dusters, actually.
Yeah. So a single rebellious monster, just known as Fighter D, decides, you know what? I've had it. I'm done with this shit. I don't want to keep losing. Fuck these guys. We know it's rigged. The public don't know. I'm going to expose them. So he sets himself, well, we don't know the gender, but they set themselves up in terms of this mission where they're going to infiltrate the Ranger Force and destroy them from within. Now, along the way, he or she comes across some...
It.
We'll say they. Come across some very unsuspecting allies. This is kind of where the story goes off the rails in a good way, in my opinion. Because, look, when everything is all fine and dandy, you know, whenever like you see a series that's focused on like a utopia, right? You know there's some dark underbelly that supports this utopia. So, we basically watch out the story, how the story gets played out. What is, you know, Fighter D's intentions? How are they going to go about and actually destroy the Dragon Keepers and the whole Ranger Force? And what about these unbeknownst allies that keep showing up and helping them along the way?
I think one of the things that we need to emphasize about this manga series and anime adaptation is the perspective of what would be like the anti-hero, right? The one that society actually as a whole collectively shuns because they are the bad guys. They're the monsters. They're the kaijus, whatever, right? And they're also down on their luck because all their leaders have been wiped out. They're just like the Dusters, like the peons.
Well, it's also like whenever you're watching like superhero movies or like Sentais where it's like, you know, at the end of the day, no matter how tough adversity gets, the good guys always win.
Right.
And this time round, this fucker's like, you know what? Fuck that. I don't want them to win.
I'm the bad guy. I'm the evil one, but
I'm the one that's been made to be the bad one. That's how I'm portrayed on screen. That's how I'm portrayed across all of the public. So I'm going to go in there and expose them and show who the real hero is, or at least just show some justice.
And rule the world. You know, because I think that's like to take over the world, I think is like their grand dream that actually all the other Dusters in the beginning are just like laughing at Fighter D.
Yeah.
So the other thing I want to emphasize is how dark and grim the story is. Because again, with all these utopian kind of themed societies, there's always going to be something that just kind of is not quite right. Something that is just unsettling. And of course, as like the everyday citizens, you probably won't notice, right? But when you look at how warped, the Dragon Keepers are, or just how some of them are just not very good people, you then start to see the cracks within this utopian society, all through the perspective of someone who is essentially down on their luck, pushed into a corner, and also technically of an enemy faction to humanity. So, Will, what do you think of the anime? What do you think of the manga?
So, first off, it's drawn nicely. Again, like it's always like a broken record kind of thing whenever you're talking about like anime or manga character designs, because generally 99% of them all kind of look the same. I thought the premise is cool. I think that, you know, we don't really get a whole lot of anti-hero stories. You get a lot of them in Western media, like for example, like, you know, you get The Boys with like
I think The Boys is actually a very good somewhat comparison. Obviously it's not one-to-one and it's not necessarily related, but it's like it's not happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, and anytime you see like superheroes doing their thing, it's like it's kind of like watching like Batman, for example, where it's like, you like on the surface it's like, yeah, he's supposed to be a superhero. He literally has a comic book, a whole series of media named after him. But at the same time, it's like there are people within the public who are like, is he really a hero? Is he a vigilante? Like, what is he really gaining from, like, saving, you know, Gotham City and all that? And it kind of has those similar tones with Go-Go Loser Ranger. Let's just call it Loser Ranger from now on. I don't want to say Go-Go too many times.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that it's a fun manga to read. I think that in terms of how it plays out as a series that's primarily shown in action, right? It's absolutely shown in action. It has those characteristics of what makes a good series for anybody that's a fan of shown in action. I think that the sort of characterization of these of the characters is done admirably. It's done okay. However, I feel that the plot itself is kind of dry. I think it's like, especially if you're going to be playing like an anti-hero kind of series, it falls flat in really pushing that anti-hero up against the world kind of thing. Yes, it's very much a struggle for Fighter D up against this monolith that is the Dragon Keepers, because they have these super powerful weapons that are able to completely dust these dusters, like permanently. Here's another thing as well. One thing we actually forgot to mention: the monsters themselves, right? They're actually invincible. They're immortal. When they quote unquote die, they essentially recombobulate and also like resurrect themselves back at the main base they have, or wherever they want to be.
Really. I mean, yeah, and just think of it kind of like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. There's always the dusters, right? They're known as like the punching bags, but they always show up, the same carbon copy one.
There's always a monster of the week.
Yep, except this time in Loser Ranger, there is no monster of the week, or they have to like figure something out every week to kind of like fake it. And then on top of that, the kind of the side character, the dusters, are our main character. Is there anything else you want to add before I give you my quick take?
Go for it.
Going off what you said, I think the art style kind of reminds me a little bit of what Chainsaw Man is, but just not as unique. I think Chainsaw Man has a way more unique look and style.
Dude, I mean, you're comparing it to Fujimoto.
I know.
Yeah.
But it reminds me such
a high bar.
But it still reminds me of like it. The art style is not clean, like very drawn,
kind of chaotic.
Yeah, and a little bit sketchbook. Like, not saying it's bad. It's more like that's the look that they're going for.
Yeah, it's meant to be a bit messy.
Yeah. So of course, if Fujimoto Sensei is like the god tier, this is like not god tier, but it's still very well drawn. The other thing I would say is, I agree. The plot, at least where it is right now, I think I read two volumes. It's kind of all right. There's not enough to go off of where I'm like super excited, or I even know kind of where it can go.
Yeah, I think the problem that the series has is that the characters come off as a bit too one-dimensional, in that they're very focused on what their aim is, right? Fighter D wants to destroy the Dragon Keepers. The Dragon Keepers just want to, you know, completely like wax lyrical about how good they are, and they're always going to be coming up on top because they know it's all fucking scripted and all that. But I felt that like with this particular premise, there was a lot more they could have done with how the characters actually go about doing their thing. Honestly, this series could have been a lot darker, and I think that would have actually helped them. Because you can see, like, any kind of like anti-hero story, you really do want to see like how fucked up things really are. And I don't think that, at least up until what we've read so far, that Go-Go Loser Rangers gets there. It does it on a very surface level, because the first chapter basically shows how fucked up things are. I mean, the first volume shows how fucked up things are, right? But they don't necessarily like dive deeper into it. And I feel that that could be detrimental to them.
I agree. It's detrimental because I understand on one hand you're trying to set... Sorry, I had to readjust the mic. You had to set things in motion. But the pace of it is so slow that there isn't really anything that captivates you besides the premise, right? Which is interesting because it's unconventional. But it is also not unique. It's been done... Like, similar premises have been done before. But I think the other thing, as I think you will agree, Fighter D is not necessarily the smartest cookie, not the sharpest tool.
But I mean, in terms of like a shonen pro tag,
yeah,
that's unfortunately the cookie cutter format.
And the thing is that I would say he's even dumber than that, because he obviously doesn't know certain human cultures.
He's been hamstrung from the beginning because he literally is just a fucking monster trying to be a human. And that's already like a kneecap for them.
Yeah. And he's a carbon copy. So in a way, I get you being very
aloof
and dumb in a way, but or very single minded, right? Rather than being very calculating. So I think as anti-hero goes, we all expect like a Lelouch. We all expect like a light, you know, that is just like, oh, like 360 no scope, 5D chess, you know, 5 head thing. And this is kind of like none of that. And maybe that changes and then we see that evolve. I also feel that you're right in that the feeling and tone that I get from the manga is that it is dark and gloomy as shit, despite it being utopian, despite it being this white, awesome kind of arena and everything. There are like confettis everywhere. There's like kids and parents that watched literally the Sunday Showdown like Sunday Night Football.
Yeah. I just feel that they don't dive deeper into the darkness.
And not enough, too.
That's where my main problem is. Like, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed reading it. I thought it was a decent manga series. I just felt that the way that this could develop actually would make the show not as appealing. Because in the end, it kind of just plays out as, well, this person's going to be the hero then, right? Like, this person is like, basically, like, with this person setting themselves up to destroy a scripted Sentai hero always wins kind of thing, they actually end up becoming that hero that always wins. At least that's how I feel the pacing and the direction of this plot is going towards.
And I think the supporting characters, and we won't really spoil that, they actually are quite, it could be quite interesting, but then it turns out, at least right now, they're all super one-dimensional.
They had so much potential with certain supporting characters.
Literally at the end of Volume 1, something kind of very interesting, I would say more interesting, happens, but it's just like, oh, okay, that's it.
And then the next volume shows up and it's just like, oh, I guess we're just moving past that now.
That's I would say the next volume is more interesting because there is a meal that is takes place where there's like a meeting of sorts between all the Rangers.
Yeah.
And that's actually more like what I was looking for, and I think what you would be looking for, and I think what everyone is looking for. Here's the problem. Volume 2, if you're adapting it, right, usually would be like what, episode 3? Episode 4? Of 12?
I guess it depends on how fast you want to adapt it, right? But like generally, like a season of anime will have 3 or 4 volumes.
Right.
Adapted, yeah.
I mean, okay, let's say
like by episode 4, basically.
Right? We would give each other that leeway, right? Do you think people, okay, so here's the other thing. I think Yostar with Arc Knights. Let's add Yostar into the picture. Excluding Azur Lane and Blue Archive, which is kind of what they're known for, Arc Knights is actually very, very gorgeous. Very nice, high production value. But on the other hand, when you have Arc Knights where I think there is a lot of lore, but there's also so much creativity that you can kind of navigate because it's a video game.
Yeah.
Azur Lane's a video game. Blue Archive's a video game. Also, all three of those contains all the waifus and gacha elements through the roof, right?
There's no waifus in this one yet.
Yeah. And I don't think even if there is, you would probably want to have them as your waifus.
There's nothing that I feel is redeeming in any way, at least from
like a character showing. Yeah, exactly. Right? Like a character perspective. So then it becomes kind of odd and interesting for an ASAP candidate because Yostar is now kind of doing this adaptation, but it's like the strict traditional sense.
Very different from what they've done before. And I wanted to build upon like what you were saying about like by episode 3, 4. Like, I think that this series, especially with the first couple chapters of the manga, the first 2-3 episodes are going to be bangers. And then after that is going to be a massive dip. I think that it'll probably come out to be like a 7.6, 7.7 on initial viewing, but then it will massively slide down given how it sort of paces itself afterwards.
I agree with the trend, but I don't think it will even start out that high. That's my expectation because if I go by just Volume 1's content, right?
It's so fast. No. The first chapter is so fast, and the second chapter is so fast. And afterwards, it's like, wow, they're really slowing things down now because they want to sort of try and build up these characters, but they're not doing it effectively.
I think without going too much, one of the Rangers is they're obviously they're color coded just like the Power Rangers. When the Red Ranger shows up and there was an incident that happens with there, that is to me like the start, like the absolute start of something I would consider anything beyond interesting.
Yeah.
And the problem, that is not right away. So when you can't captivate people right away, I think the reception is going to be even poorer.
Yeah. So I think to wrap up this specific series, right, Go Go Loser Ranger, I think that it's worth a watch, but don't be expecting fireworks. I think this is like a 6.9, 7 at best.
Now, I agree with what Will has said, except I would add one caveat, which is there is a high chance, or no, not high chance, there is a chance that there is some sort of shift, some sort of change when things build up momentum in terms of plot and pacing and character development, or when motivations of characters start to become more twisted or more clear, that it will be like a dangers in my heart situation, yeah. And then it flips. Now, maybe not that drastic.
But I feel like it might happen too late.
Yeah, exactly. That's my opinion of that, right? Yeah. So
there's that, I think.
But I think it will look very good, because at least Yostar's, at least in the past with Art Knights, at least I've seen, it's extremely well done. But this is like the most, I don't know where this is going, more so than Elusive Samurai. Like, Elusive Samurai, I can say
There's a direction for it, for sure. I mean, yeah. It helps that they have history on their side, right? But at the same time, like with the way that Sentai series go, I think that it's a make or break. We don't feel too confident about Go Go Loser Rangers, but that's not to say it's going to be a terrible show.
If you gave the manga a score, what would you give it? I gave it a 7.
Maybe a 7.5. Yeah. I would round it down to a 7.
I think if I read more, there's a chance that it might increase in score, but
there's also an equal chance it'll go down.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now we're going to talk about series of this topic.
A last minute switcheroo we did.
Right. We are going to be talking about Dandadan. Now, Dandadan is insanely popular right now. Like, my social media feeds will not shut the fuck up about it. It's based on a manga series, ongoing, of the same name by Yukinobu Tatsu, who did both the story and art. Completely free to read on Shonen Jump Plus, published in English. Simulpubbed through Manga Plus. Don't need to say the rest because, his media, of course, it's going to be like that. The current manga score is an 8.29, ranked 309. Popularity is the part which is, like, fucking insane. 99, right? This series only really started, like, in the last year and a half, 2 years, and it is already one of the most popular manga series of all time.
Side note, when I refreshed the score this morning, the popularity jumped. So I think pre-announcement adaptation.
Yeah, I think people are like, now it's like, oh shit, okay.
Let's get on this train, and we are as well. Yeah. So,
and this is the other thing that is also going to be getting people to really check this series out, because the adaptation news coming out from it is bonkers. First of all, 2024 release, no confirmed season or release dates. I'm not even going to talk about the studio just yet, because that's the real, what the fuck's going on. So the director is Fugo Yamashiro, who did Isekai, Time Machine Blues as an assistant director. Actually, these are both assistant director roles, so this is going to be the time where they're actually helming the series. The series composition and the script was going to be done by Hiroshi Seko, who did Jujutsu Kaisen and Chainsaw Man.
Never heard of them.
Yeah, but that's completely fine. Take your time to watch that shit. The music is going to be Kensuke Ushio, who did Heavenly Delusions, as well as Devilman Crybaby. Fuck yes.
Never heard of those either.
And the character design is Naoyuki Onda, who did Bahamut Genesis, as well as Inuyashiki. Monster design, Yoshimichi Kameda, who did Mob Psycho 100 character design. And Inuo's, they were the chief animation director. Did you hear any of those series?
I've never heard of any of those things. Yes. But Will, when you get someone who has these kinds of anime credits under their belt, isn't there some sort of through line? Or is it just like me being paranoid about things?
I think it's you. I don't know what you're getting at here.
As in the studio's affiliated films and credits?
I mean, Isekin, yeah, Devil May Cry Baby. I don't see Chainsaw Man or Jujutsu Kaisen.
Inuo?
Or, yeah, okay, yeah. Inuyashiki or Bahamut Genesis.
I mean, it's not, it can't be all of it, yeah. Right? But there's a lot of it.
But you're doing the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia thing.
Yes, I am doing, I mean, I can see it,
well,
at least.
We might as well just say now who the fuck is producing this the series. It's fucking Science fucking Saru. Of all fucking studios, why them? I guess we'll figure it out when they actually release it. But before we even talk about that, what the hell is Dan Da Dan all about? We first start off with Momo Ayase, a high school girl who unfortunately just got broken up by a guy who she was deeply infatuated with because he was really rough around the edges. He was like some sort of like scumbag. He was just one of those kind of teenage delinquents and just got her heart broken. Bumps into a boy who unfortunately gets bullied a lot because he's a bit of a weirdo. This kid is Ken Takakura, who is also named after the same idol, the same delinquent idol that Momo Ayase has. Now, how do these two come together? Well, they just happen to bump into each other, and Momo Ayase was essentially using him to try and gain attention of delinquent boys, whereas Ken thought that perhaps this girl had a vested interest in the paranormal.
Because that's what he's into.
He is a alien boy. He's really interested.
Like those occult? Occult. Oh, sorry.
No, extraterrestrial.
Extraterrestrial, thank you. Yeah, ET stuff.
Yes. However, not too bad in terms of the occult stuff, because it turns out that Momo Ayase is a believer in the occult, in spirits, in the weird supernatural. So when the two come together, they decide, hey, I don't believe in aliens. Well, fuck you. I don't believe in spirits. Well, I'm going to prove to you that aliens exist. Fine. Bring it on, bitch.
And I'll prove to you that spirits exist. Fine.
So they go off on their little merry way. Nothing really happens, and then all of a sudden, everything happens.
Yeah.
Right? And Momo Ayase, who doesn't believe in spirits, sees a spirit. No, doesn't believe in aliens, sees aliens. And then Ken Takakura
sees spirits. In fact, gets into quite a bit of a tanglement with a spirit.
Yeah, game over there.
And then add in action, a lot of action, and Dan Da Dan shows up.
A lot of really revealing shit happens throughout the first volume. I don't even say the first volume. The first like three chapters is pretty pretty high octane. I think that's already enough to basically summarize what the fuck you're gonna experience from watching Dan Da Dan.
Now, I have said endless good shit about Dan Da Dan. So I think personally, there's nothing else I should really add on that front, because it's obvious where I stand on the manga front. I'm actually even up to date. I read it every week or every whenever it comes out. But Will, what do you think of Dan Da Dan?
This is probably where I think the controversial starts coming in. This is essentially an amalgamation of all the popular series that we've currently seen, in terms of you've got the spirits from Jujutsu Kaisen, you've got the weird alien-esque monsters coming in from Chainsaw Man, you've got, of course, put those two together and it's double the octane, super high as fuck, right? So I think that this is a no-brainer in terms of why it's so popular on WSJ, because it literally builds its name on being the most shonen of all shonen series. And Dan Da Dan definitely fits the bill. I think that when you mix in, like, I think this is where, like, my, I guess, okay, you know what? I'll just say it's a criticism. I think it's essentially kind of just rehashing the best parts of other series and putting it together, in the sense that is this something completely new? No. And that's not a fault of its own either. A lot of series kind of just rehash similar successful tidbits and tropes from other series. And I'm also like not surprised at all as to why it's in the top 100 and being the most popular manga series on my anime list. Entertaining? Absolutely. But I feel like the entertainment is a given. Given that, you know, the ingredients you have in this particular manga series, it makes absolute sense why this is going to be a popular series. Personally, for me, I am kind of done with shonen action. Mm. And that's probably why, for me, whilst reading it, oh, for sure, some of the artwork is phenomenal. I will give them
like
that.
The two-page panels?
It is amazing what the artists had done with this series. The panels look fantastic.
And there's a lot of two-page panels, would you say?
It's fucking weird and crazy, but it's not without its cracks, right?
There's, absolutely.
I think that there are certain scenes. I'm not going to talk about them because, one, they're risque and controversial as fuck, but also, like, I don't want to spoil anything. I think some elements of quote-unquote violence, it's a bit much. It's very full frontal with it, especially I'm talking about the abduction scene.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah, okay.
That part made me incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I get that. It's shock value, right? But at the same time, it's also, you got to remember that this is still very much a series that is for, like, young teenagers and...
Siulin, right?
I don't think that that's something you kind of want to... I get it. It's not the first to do it. It certainly won't be the last. I just feel that... Was that part absolutely necessary?
Probably not.
But was it an artistic choice or like a plot choice? Who's to say that, you know, without it, it would be any better? I didn't write Danadan, so I'm not going to be like critiquing that particular part. I just was not very comfortable with that particular scene.
But it's only one scene. But I also agree, right? It could have remixed it in a way that it might not be that overt or in your face about it.
Yeah. There's elements of Undead Unluck in there too.
Yeah.
Which is, like, you know, I guess also a detriment to how I appreciated Danadan.
So for me, in regards to the absurdity and the bonkersness of it, I think it is the kind of stupid and dumb that I want out of, I guess, a shonen action series. In many ways, the comparison to Undead Unluck, I think, is extremely warranted, because Danadan is like what I would imagine a very good Undead Unluck would be. Now, does that mean then it is like, oh wow, 10 out of 10 best anime of all time? No. Does that mean that it's better than JJK or any other of those really outstanding shonen action series? No. But I think Danadan is hard pumping adrenaline, absurdity, fun, and dumb in a way that I can appreciate.
Yeah. I think what I would say about it is, given how far they push the controversial or at least like the really risky shit, this could have also been a seinen series. Now, being a SJ property and being the most popular platform for shonen action series, it makes complete sense that they're going to be keeping this as a, you know, a shonen series, because we've seen similar things before, not just in terms of like the risky shit, but also just in terms of like the level of violence that comes in with these shonen action series. I just felt that if they were to just push things a little bit further, that's where the tipping point is. And if it had been a seinen series, or at least something that was a bit more on the grotesque and more mature side, yo, I would have been all in it. Not to say I'm not into it at all. I think it's a good read. I think it's a really good read. Does it reinvent the wheel? Absolutely not. I think that
I would agree as well.
I think it essentially uses a lot of tropes. Even some of the aliens, it's Ultraman-esque, man. Like, one of the villains is literally a copper copy of one of the villains from Ultraman.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's like you can tell that it's like this is not meant to be a series where it's just going to be like showing you absolutely new shit. I don't think any of this stuff is new, but that's not a bad thing either. I think the fact that if it works and it's popular and they do it in a way where people really, really enjoy it, I have no doubt that this is going to be a good series.
All right. So let's add in Science Saru into that mix now.
This is where it's going to be really, really tough for me to talk about, because I love Science Saru, no matter how bad some of their series are, right? And a lot of the stuff they've done before is weird as shit. I fully admit that Science Saru does not do things normally. I even watched the trailer for it, and you could see like some of the style in Sansaru in that trailer. More specifically with the music. The music was great. The music was really, really good.
Bumping.
What I'm worried about, though, with Sansaru is that historically they've never done a second season for any of their series.
Correct.
Not at all. Like, you might say, oh, but isn't Time Machine Blues, you know, no, it's
like actually a spin-off thing.
It's a spin-off sequel, right?
I'll give you a half
what point. What about Space Dandy, right? Well, Space Dandy wasn't their primary work. They were actually a supporting studio. So that's why
another half point I'll give to whoever, you know, makes that point, right? I understand.
Bones ran the show for that one, right? And like only like certain episodes did Sansaru actually do anything for it. So with the way that Dan the Dan runs, right? Dan the Dan is extreme. I mean, 99 popularity, right? And the fact that it already has 12 volumes, I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. This is probably going to be one of those like 28 to 30 volume series. That's just, you know, if it's something's popular, don't fuck with it, right? But with Sansaru not having done a single sequel, a single second season or anything beyond the first season, I don't know where the direction of the show will go. And I also do not know what direction Sansaru is setting themselves up for. Is this a change in direction because of the fact that they have, you know, a new chief in place? Is this going to be something that's going to be a lot more standard with Sansaru? Or, you know, what I feel is probably likely, this is just their one showing and then that's it. And if it does do really, really well, they'll probably hand it off to another studio. Now, that would also be pretty bad because in the end, who's going to pick up something that is extremely popular on WSJ? Probably going to be MAPPA.
Or Trigger.
Ooh, that's a good one, but I also don't know if Trigger would be running the show beyond like a season or two.
I also agree.
I think that if anything, if they wanted to go for like the safest and easiest option, MAPPA. Because MAPPA will serialize the shit out of anything.
I think OLM and Toho, maybe.
I don't know about OLM. It doesn't seem like this is something in their wheelhouse. Toho, possibly. But they're going to be busy with a bunch of stuff too, right?
Kaiju number 8, yeah. But, okay, so the thing I think about Dan to Dan in terms of, okay, so on one hand, I think when I was imagining what anime studio would adapt Dan to Dan, it was either Sansaru or Studio Trigger or something along those lines. I think is what a lot of people would assume. And Sansaru was, in my opinion, because of their lack of sequel development. I also would agree with you, Will, that it's like a one-and-done situation. But Dan to Dan is not itself a one-and-done situation. It's a very hot property, very important property for the lineup of Shonen Jump. So what is Sansaru getting into is my interesting kind of question that I ponder.
Yeah, because Sansaru have never done a Shonen Action.
Yeah.
Like, or at least like a full-blown like Shonen Action. They've done action, right? Yeah. Let's not forget they've done Devilman Crybaby.
Or elements of action, right? But they're more known for being more artistic and more
avant-garde.
Like, I mean, if Yuasa is like he's the disciple of Satoshi Kon, I think, in a lot of ways.
I mean, look, if you take out, for example, if you just take out Devilman Crybaby, right? Isekin, Japan Sings 2020, Haikei Monogatari, Yurei Deko, Tatami Galaxy, Tatami Time Machine Blues, and of course, now that it's on Netflix, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. Like, you would be like, yeah, no, these are all like artsy-fartsy kind of weird shows of like varying levels of acclaim.
And Brian O'Malley said Scott Pilgrim is not getting a second season.
Yeah, so what's going to fucking happen with Dan to Dan, right? Like, on one hand, I'm super happy, like pleasantly surprised, extremely surprised that Sansaru even got like the mention for Dan to Dan. But at the same time, I'm just wondering, on one hand, if Dan to Dan does, and it probably will, if it does do well in terms of the adaptation process and gets more shit going on, do they stick with the same studio? And then on Sansaru's side, what does that mean for all the other things that he could be doing? Where are they going to be going more into like actual serialized, like long longevity series, or is this just going to be a one and done and they go back to doing the usual stuff they do, like the Isekins, right, like the Heike Monogatari's, like the Yuri Dekos?
So if I were to speculate with the amount of information that I have and kind of my guess, it is interesting when you look at the series composition person and the director. The director, Fuga Yamashiro, did Isekin and Time Machine Blues, which I would argue, I think a lot of people would agree, is more artistically avant-garde, that type of shade of that Science Saru is known for. On the other hand, though, the person who is in charge of series composition, which is a very big role, is, and the script too, is Seiko Sensei, who does the Chainsaw Man and Jujutsu Kaisen under that person's belt.
Technically, it's Hiroshi Sensei.
Hiroshi Sensei, my bad. Hiroshi Seiko, who did Chainsaw Man and Jujutsu Kaisen,
which are like two of the longest running Shonen Jump series, both from the manga front as well as going to be on the anime front.
High octane, blood, violence, and everything. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds if you were to take the two highest creative control people, the figureheads of the series. So, and also the trailer, as short as it was, I think it was like 40-something seconds, was really reassuring in terms of how I think it will feel, the vibe. I mean, who knows if the animation quality is going to be sustained throughout however, like one cur or two curs or however long, right? Or the look of it, at least I can see that they are not playing it, quote unquote, what I would consider safe.
Oh, it's going to be completely ludicrous, this adaptation, for sure.
Which is exactly what I would expect out of a Dan to Dan anime adaptation.
But then, since you brought up the people that have been working on, like, Chainsaw Man, Jujutsu Kaisen, also the character designer, Naoyuki Onda, also did Inuyashiki. I mean, MAPPA is on their heels too.
Yeah. So, and the design of the monsters, which obviously also would include like the extraterrestrial life forms.
Mob Psycho, right?
Mob Psycho.
From Bones.
Yeah. And then the music, you have the Devilman Crybaby guy doing the fucking music. You're just like, that's just going to be crazy. So I think that all the ingredients are set there that I can at least see a very well done project, a very well done anime series.
My worry is that there's too many chefs in the kitchen, where it's like, it's Science Saru, who you know are aesthetically weird, and you have MAPPA, which are historically fucking like shonen all the way out. So with the two coming together, is this like the change that we see in Science Saru, or is this just a one-off, and after that, who knows what the future of Dan to Dan's anime adaptation is going to be?
My guess, though, is that it shouldn't be a one-off. Because,
oh, absolutely not.
Because, well, I mean, because more, how
I,
can
I mean,
you?
I mean more one-off in terms of like Science Saru doing it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I agree, but I would say, I know, when I mean I agree, I know what you're saying. I think that you won't pick Dan to Dan if it's going to be a one and done. That's my take on it. Of course, I think more recently with, you know, AOT, Ascendance of a Bookworm, and a lot of studios switch hands of IPs. That has been more commonplace nowadays, whereas back then it's kind of like if a studio is known for this, they just hold it tight and they don't let it go regardless.
I mean, yeah, it was Attack on Titan with studio until it wasn't, right? Yeah. It was fucking chain, like One Punch Man, you would always be like, oh, it's Madhouse. Totally Madhouse. And then JC Staff just shows up. It's like, okay, sure, cool, whatever, right? I don't think that Dan to Dan is just going to have the one season. It's more of who's going to be doing the second season and beyond.
And I think it's very hard for me to conceive a scenario where Science Saru is like, okay, let's just give it a shot with this and see where it goes. I think it's a very good chance there is, but my guess is they would probably want to go for the long haul. But I also then worry, like, what does that mean for Science Saru as a studio going forward?
It might just be them wanting to pick up more long-running projects because they haven't done it before. That could be one particular reason.
Yeah.
But what we will say, though, is that, you know, aside from all that, if we were to just focus on what we're going to be expecting from this one season, it's going to look fucking mental. It's going to be batshit insane.
It's going to be like, I didn't take any acid, but
I'm tripping, dude.
Also, like, my heart, it's like Crank, you know? Yes, that Jason Statham movie? It's Crank. It's, except not as R-rated, right? It's more like PG-13. Well,
it depends on what they adapt, right?
Right.
So, but I'm sure, but you know they're going to be, like, toning it down a bit.
I don't know, actually. I mean, I think Sayan Saru is just going to be unapologetic about it. I mean, Devilman Crybaby is pretty unapologetic.
But it wasn't a shonen series either.
That is very true, right? So who knows, right? It's like if you are a director for a Marvel film and you're well known for, let's say, directing really like blood gore fest horror movies, for example, you're gonna change kind of the way you do things to a certain extent, right? Yeah. So I agree. I just think it's a very interesting choice. It's a long time coming for Dandadan. Everyone saw it coming in terms of having an anime.
And Sayan Saru getting it is a very welcome surprise.
It's a very welcome surprise. I'm more worried about Sayan Saru than I'm worried about the anime. I'll put it that way. I think the manga is great, and I think the anime will be pretty great as well.
I think that I'm not too worried. I'm just more like wondering what their direction is. But I'm sure that if they were going to pick up in the first place, they must have thought it out beforehand, rather than just jumping at the opportunity to take Dandadan. But who knows? We'll have to see what happens beyond the first season. So I think that about wraps up our discussion in terms of manga series are going to be adapted and coming out in the upcoming year. I think that's in terms of just writing things down. Son of Affection, it's going to be good, though with fewer eyes because it's a shoujo, unfortunately. Loser Ranger, I am not too hot on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's kind of like a 7.1. Elusive Samurai, I think both Jason and I are in agreement that this should still be a decent series, but given the way that, historical series tend to go, it could kind of falter. And then Dandadan, that's just going to be a banger. So do not hesitate to check out Dandadan. Do not hesitate to check out A Sign of Affection. But maybe, err on the side of caution when watching Elusive Samurai and Goku Loser Ranger.
I know I am being very reductivist in this, but what I'm going to kind of predict is for a lot of people, if you're into shonen action, which by all accounts, almost everyone is by popular opinion, Dandadan is going to be on everyone's watch list, like first lineup.
Regardless if you listen to us or not.
Then I think Elusive Samurai will kind of be like the second or third show that you watch in your rotation, if you have multiple shows on your seasonal lineup list. Then I would say either you watch only A Sign of Affection because it is a shoujo series, or because it is, you are into that, or as like a palate cleanser of sorts. And I think, unfortunately, Goku Loser Ranger just loses out on this one.
It has potential.
It has potential, but we'll I'm not that. Holding my breath either.
Yeah,
I want to always be proven wrong, because usually, almost always, Will and I want anime and manga to be great and succeed. But
and we wouldn't be talking about it as a manga series, as part of the ASAP, without at least having some hope that these are going to be good series.
And it's definitely worth mentioning to you guys, at least, to see if it's maybe your cup of tea or not.
Yep. So, I think it's time to roll out the new show notes. You got your script ready this time?
Wait, do I actually have new show notes? Well, yeah, we do. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Good Anime Palette Podcast. We release episodes 3 times a month, but our main numbered episodes are released every 2 weeks. If you want to, we greatly appreciate you leaving a rating or review on our podcast platform of choice. If not, it's all good. We thank you for listening nonetheless. If you want to contact us, there's a myriad of ways you can contact us. The links are in the show description. But we also have a website. We encourage you to check it out, www.goodanimepalette.com. All lowercase, all one word. Music credits for this episode, for the first time since it's the first episode of Season 7, our intro music is Flow To It by Taipa. Our break music is Laser Drops by Hip Color. And our outro music is 2011 by Rocket Jr. You can support the music artists that we feature by listening to them on Spotify, Apple Music, or your music listening platform of choice. And Epidemic Sound provides all our royalty-free music. And if you're interested, you can sign up using the referral link in the show description. Terms and conditions apply. Did I get it right this time?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it only took you two times to get Rocket Jr. correct, and now you've got it. So,
well, third time's the charm, right?
Yep. So, yeah. Do not worry, of course, if we didn't cover some of the manga series you wanted to hear us talk about, because there's always going to be an opportunity every season for us to talk about it. It just might happen at a later date.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, we're probably going to incorporate more manga here and there as we go on.
Yeah,
so.
Who would have thought that, you know, listen to an anime podcast, people actually wanted to hear more about manga?
Well, as well.